Okay, thank you all for coming. What I'm going to talk about is how Canada tried and failed to act in terms of getting generic drugs to developing countries. And the particular piece of legislation that I'm going to talk about is now known as Canada's Access to Medicines Regime. Relationships to disclose. Other contributors to this, the first three people were co-authors on the paper that's down there, Kohler, Lection, etc. And some of the slides that I'm going to use were stolen from other people. Some of them know they were stolen, some of them don't. The project was funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, but they had no say in either the publication or the contents of this presentation. So the tale of CAMR, as it's known, starts in 2001 with what's called the Doha Declaration, which was it was a ministerial meeting of the WTO, and at that ministerial meeting there was extensive lobbying by the South, and it ended with the Doha Declaration, which recognized that members of the WTO could use compulsory licensing, which was in fact written into the TRIPS agreement, trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights. So compulsory licensing was written into that, had been discouraged up until 2001. The Doha Declaration recognized that countries could use compulsory licensing, and furthermore that each country could determine for itself what was an emergency. So there wasn't any definition contrary to what a lot of people often put out. The particular section of the Doha Declaration that gave rise to CAMR was paragraph 6. Paragraph 6 recognized that some countries could not make generics on their own. They didn't have the domestic capacity. So there had to be a mechanism put in place to allow these countries, the ones without the capacity to produce generics, to get generics for their populations. And generics are particularly important in the developing world. This slide here just shows what happens when generics are available. This is the case of ARVs, antiretrovirals, and you can see there that in June of 2000, it was costing almost $10,500 for triple therapy. As soon as generics entered into the market, that's around here, Cipla, an Indian company, the price goes down to $350. And then as more and more generic companies enter the market, the price just keeps on dropping. At that July of 2006, it's $132. Now I believe it's around, for first line therapies, it's around $80 or $90 per year. Okay. So the final settlement of around the paragraph 6 issue said that you could do compulsory licensing. You had to get a compulsory license in the country that wished to import the drugs and in the country that was going to export them. And there was no, in the paragraph 6 decision, there was no restrictions on the diseases that were covered. So this is a headline shortly after the final decision around paragraph 3. This is the national newspaper in Canada. And it refers to, the headline talks about Stephen Lewis. Stephen Lewis is a well-respected Canadian former politician, then became Canadian ambassador to the United Nations, and at this particular time was the special UN envoy to Africa for HIV/AIDS. He came out in favor of Canada doing something around HIV/AIDS, getting drugs to developing countries. And the next day, the headline in the same newspaper was that Ottawa, the capital of Canada, in other words, the government, was actually going to do something. Well, they did. So we had Canadian legislation passed in May of 2004. There were some problems around getting the legislation operationalized, so it didn't actually come into effect until May 2005. It was originally called the Jean Chrétien Pledge to Africa Act. Jean Chrétien was the outgoing prime minister at the time and wanted something with his name on it. And now it's called the Canada's Access to Medicine Regime, and that more or less reflects the fact that the Liberals are out of power and the Conservatives are in power, and they didn't want anything with Jean Chrétien's name attached to it. So Canada was actually the first country to take advantage of the Paragraph 6 decision. Unfortunately, there were multiple flaws in the legislation. It was limited to a group of medications. It didn't allow for non-governmental organizations to get involved very easily. Countries that were not members of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, were not automatically eligible to participate. The patent holder could apply for an injunction if it felt that the generic company that was producing the drugs under the compulsory license was doing so for commercial reasons. One of the main flaws in the legislation was it only applied for a 2-year period and it was only renewable once. In other words, if you wanted to export for more than drugs for more than 2 years, you had to apply again for a compulsory license. Compulsory licenses also only applied for one country. So if you wanted to export the same drug to multiple countries, you needed a compulsory license for each country. And finally, you could only export a fixed quantity of medication under the compulsory license. If you wanted to export more, that wasn't allowed. Some other flaws in the legislation. First, there was a period of negotiation between the generic company and the patent holder for 30 days, and only if these negotiations failed to result in a compulsory license on reasonable terms and conditions, then could you go on to, a voluntary license on reasonable terms and conditions, then only could you go on to get a compulsory license. There's no definition of what reasonable meant in the legislation or in the regulations. And furthermore, this 30-day period also provided a window for either pharmaceutical companies or countries to start to put pressure on the country that wanted to import the medications not to use this legislation. So the results of CAMR since it was passed, or since it was operationalized in May of 2005, so 5.5 years, one use of the legislation resulting in the export of 260,000 packs of a fixed drug combination for HIV/AIDS to Rwanda, which started in September of 2008. This is just a timeline of what happened, so you can see that in Apotex, which is a quite large Canadian drug company, tried to start things rolling in August of 2006, and it took until September of 2008, so over 2 years, to get the drugs actually out of Canada. And this is how the delay broke down. So out of 25 months, there was 7 months because of the tendering process from Rwanda, 5 months for manufacturing and arranging shipping, and then more than half of the time was due to the problems in the Canadian legislation. Apotex claims that it cost them $3 million to do this, and the head of Apotex says that unless the legislation is changed, Apotex is never going to do this again. So why hasn't CAMR worked? Well, first of all, when the legislation was developed, there was no input from developing countries. So the legislation failed to take into account realities of their health systems or the unique context in each country. It assumed the developing countries actually had the knowledge and human resource capacity to make use of the legislation, which isn't necessarily true. A lot of these countries are quite resource poor, not only financially, but in terms of people who can understand the ins and outs of the TRIPS agreement and the Doha Declaration. The legislation also had problems because of heavy lobbying in its initial formation by the brand name industry to limit the scope of the legislation. The debate got quite narrowly channeled into a how do we get around paragraph 6 rather than looking at the issue through a human rights lens. The departments that were involved in drafting the legislation, Industry Canada and International Trade, were not really concerned with human rights. They're concerned with protecting brand intellectual property rights because of their focus on investment in Canada. There were a limited number of participants in the consultations leading to CAMR, so essentially it was the brand name industry, the generic industry, and civil society. And civil society, such as MSF, Oxfam, and others, were focused on getting legislation passed and were willing to overlook the flaws. So there is also, at this point, no political will to reform CAMR. There was a review in 2007 which said, we're not going to bother doing anything about it. In 2007, the current federal government has other focuses, so it's looking at things like tax incentives for drug donations to developing countries. It's increased contributions to the Global Fund, but really this particular government and possibly the previous Liberal government doesn't really think that it has a responsibility to promote the right to health in developing countries. So the question is there a need for Canadian generics? I think that there is. The more competition, the lower the price, and additional competition, especially in the case of second and third generation therapies, may be very important for keeping prices down. Those prices are currently about 3 or 4 times the price of first line therapy. And even if Canadian prices are higher than prices from other countries, the quality of Canadian generics may be superior. I'm not going to go through this. There are a series of amendments that have been proposed for CAMR. In fact, 2 weeks ago, there was parliamentary hearings in Canada about changing the legislation, but that was torpedoed by a combination of the Conservative government and one or two members of the Liberal opposition. Other countries have also tried to amend legislation to make use of paragraph 6. So Norway, the Netherlands, India, China, and the European Union, they have had zero exports from those countries. This is a slide that compares the legislation in Canada, Norway, and the European Union. Countries or regions have different types of legislation. Some points are better than others, some points are worse than others, but the bottom line is that this legislation is not really working, and that raises the question, is this a function of different flaws in all the pieces of the legislation? Is it a problem is it a function of the WTO Doha Declaration in general? And compulsory licensing on its own may not be enough really to get drugs to developing countries. There are other things that Canada could do, so in terms of technology transfer to developing countries that want to engage in generic manufacturing on their own. The Canadian generic industry is well developed, could develop pediatric formulations of medications, could develop heat-stable formulations of medications. Canada could do more to promote the use of patent pools, which is one way of getting around the problems of developing things like fixed dose combinations where there are multiple patents. But the bottom line so far is CAMR represents a significant gap between promises made politically and the will to meaningfully implement those promises. Thank you.